Sam Fender mit Dead Boys gehört auf Flux FM am Mittwochnachmittag. Heute Abend spielt der Künstler, der kürzlich bei den Critics' Choice Preisen, bei den Brit Awards besser gesagt, aufräumen konnte, hier in Berlin im Columbia Theater. Er wird eben dort Stücke aus seiner letzten EP und auch schon Lieder aus der kommenden Debüt-LP Hypersonic Missiles präsentieren. Jetzt ist er erstmal hier bei Flux FM. Wir quatschen über ein selbstgebautes Studio und das sogenannte Red Light Syndrome, das man vermeidet, wenn man ein eigenes Studio baut. Wir sprechen über sogenannte Toxic Masculinity und auch Probleme, die vor allen Dingen Männer damit haben, ihre psychische Gesundheit quasi in Frage zu stellen. Wir sprechen über einen Menschen, dem Sam das Leben gerettet hat, in der Tat mit seiner Musik. Und wir finden raus, was eine Drinking Town with a Fishing Problem ist. Zunächst sage ich hello and welcome to Flux FM, Sam.
Hello, mate. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm full of cold. Yes. And I'm on the antibiotics.
Oh, right.
But I'm on the mend.
Yes. And you've just... sung a little bit with the acoustic guitar,
yes,
in this little studio here.
Yeah, I was just having a little
And I was like, his voice sounds fantastic. There's a little crackle in
little
there.
A little crackle there, but yeah, it's all right. It's coming through. I mean, it's like that on tour anyway.
Yes,
you're singing so much that you tend to, it takes a bit of wear and tear, but that's just the nature of the job.
Yes, and I think that's something that can turn out to be super beautiful if there's a little crackle or a little mistake in the music.
Bit of imperfection.
You know? Yes.
Bit of human mistake.
Yes, we're all looking that, actually. Actually, we're all looking for exactly that. So congratulations on the Dead Boys EP and on finishing the album Hypersonic Missiles.
Yeah.
It's going to come out in August, the beginning of August.
Yes.
And you've recorded it kind of like on your own.
Yes.
With friends.
With friends, with my producer, Bramwell Bronte.
Yes.
Or Tom Lewis.
Yes.
He has two names.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like my older brother, sort of. He's 10 years older than me. And he's kind of looks after me.
Yeah.
And he's great. Yeah. We've been working for 5 years together. Four years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we started recording all of this in guerrilla recordings. We're doing things in like a shed with my manager's shed, and we're playing, recording vocals. We recorded the vocals for Play God in my mother's flat in the front room, just with a rubbish mic and a rubbish thing. But now because of things worked and since we signed a record deal, we're able to build a studio.
Yeah. And you did that, although you would have had the possibility to work with top notch producers in top notch studios.
I've got a top notch producer.
Yeah.
It's called Bramwell.
That's true. But let's say already popular producers big studios.
I didn't want to be, don't fix what isn't broken, I think, is my saying for this. It doesn't, you know, the records that we made with no money in like, you know, a rubbish, like, you know, a cheap mic, a cheap interface on Logic on a computer, you know what I mean? Like we did it on the cheap.
And yes.
But the reality is if you've got someone who knows what they're doing, which Tom does, he's worked in studios all his life, like we managed to create something with nothing, you know what I mean?
And
now that we've got a studio, it's like it's a different ball game, you know what I mean? And I don't, like, just because, you know, like putting me in a room with Rick Rubin isn't gonna make,
yes,
I'm still gonna sound like me, but it'll just be without Tom,
and it's to be gonna fair, be more Sam, expensive.
And the Sam Fender, yeah, it's gonna be a hell of a lot more expensive. But Sam Fender, The sound of Sam Fender isn't Sam Fender without Bramwell Bronte.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Especially the first
album. He's part of the band, kind of.
Yeah, man. He's like my wingman.
Yeah.
I need him.
That sounds good to me. And I've read that you did the whole thing to kind of like avoid the red light syndrome, which happens when you're in an expensive studio and you have to start singing. The red light turns on and you realize.
We try to do the vocals for I think it was for Play God. And we went into a studio and I knew that it was costing like, I mean, it was a cheap compared to London. But it was still expensive. It was like £600 a day or something. And back then, like I was living on the dole. I was living off the state. So like I was only getting, you know, a couple hundred quid a month. So like I knew how much it was costing and it was terrifying. I didn't want to I knew that if I didn't get that take, it was going to cost another 600 quid to get it the next day.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't do it because I'd be going
too much pressure.
Yeah, too much pressure. But so then we scrapped it. We instead of doing it through a really expensive £1,000 microphone going into a £1,000,000,000 compressor going into a blooming massive studio, we just went and did it through like a £200 mic and a £50 interface in my mom's flat. And that is the vocal that you hear on Play God.
Yeah,
and it sounds
Yeah,
I think as good as anything else.
As soon as you're an artist that has a message and that has a song that really needs to be put out, it's not as important which microphones you're using or which producer.
If rubbish goes in, rubbish comes out.
True. You can compressors on rubbish. It's gonna sound more trashy.
Doesn't make a heap of a difference.
After the compression part, it's gonna even sound worse, more trashy.
Yeah, exactly.
So you've been touring for a while now, and you're gonna play some new songs on tonight's stage, right? So you have to play some unreleased material.
There's a few tunes off the album we're playing tonight. Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
One called The Borders. Yeah. I'm really excited for people to hear.
Congratulations, by the way, on the Critics' Choice Award.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
What happened there?
I don't know.
What happened there?
You're the next fucking Adele now. I'm sorry, buddy. Your next album is gonna have to be called like 25 or 26.
We're the first guitar artist to win the Critics' Choice.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you count, I mean, James Bay plays a guitar, but he's not really like an indie guitar artist. No. You know what I mean? But nobody's really like who's been like alternative guitar music. You know what I mean? I mean, because guitar music's in a strange place.
At the moment, that's true.
I mean? There's loads of great stuff. It's just not getting the airtime.
No, that's true.
Loads of great guitar bands, but we're just like, it's, you know, people.
Well, I think that there's a great female perspective on guitar music coming from Australia
right now.
That's totally interesting. Yeah. And I do love your music because of the lyrics that you're using, but there's too many bands right now still that sound like the School of 2005, you know?
Yeah,
and they only sing about their emotions, and I don't care anymore.
It's like
you're a 30-something guy from London, and your emotions, they're not bothering me. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Just write about something else.
Yeah, and that's something that you've done from the very beginning.
I find it more easy to write about other people because then I can be more honest.
Mm.
Write about myself. No one wants to hear about me. My life's boring, man. Like, I'm boring.
You could write a song about being on tour, but that's boring too.
No one wants to hear about the emotions of a 24-year-old white kid from the northeast of England. You know what I mean? Like, people want to hear about, you know, the stories, the things I've got. And I feel like that's what my first album has. It's got a lot of different stories in. Mind you, saying that, The Borders is actually about me.
I see.
But it's more about childhood story, you know. It's more interesting than that.
And I mean, we're going to... we have just listened to Dead Boys, and it's a super personal story that you're talking about. A good friend of... I think it was two friends of yours that took their lives in the past, and then you... hesitated to bring out the song because you were like, I don't want to make a dollar on
I didn't want to capitalize
friends.
on the tragedy of my friend. My friend killed himself, and I didn't want to the other guy as well. I nearly said his name. Jesus. But I didn't want to capitalize on that. But at the same time, once I'd finished the song and showed it to the people in my immediate circle and my immediate team, they were all like, you know, this is a good song. This could probably help.
Yeah.
You know, this could probably raise a conversation, make people talk about male suicide because they don't. And I mean, it's the highest. It's predominantly men who take their lives. You know what I mean? And
in England, it's more men dying and 45 or something.
84 a week.
Yeah.
84 a week, and it's the biggest killer of men under the age of 45.
Yeah.
More higher than cancer, higher than road accidents, higher than murder, higher than everything.
That's crazy. I didn't expect that. I've just found out today.
Yeah, the biggest killer of men is men.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, killing themselves.
And the toxic masculinity.
That's what it's called.
And it's a nice... And it describes the...
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I wanted to. So we released that song, and then it did do some help.
Yeah, yeah. I've read about the fact that you were doing an interview about the song on BBC, and then a guy who was on the way to kill himself in his car listened to that interview, and he thought about toxic masculinity, and he thought about the fact that he should probably open up about his mental health problems
rather than to kill himself.
And then he turned the car. So it's a fact that you and your music saved a life. That's crazy.
I like to think that my friend who took his life actually saved his life, which is a strange one to take in.
Yeah.
But it's like a butterfly effect. I wouldn't have wrote that song.
Sure.
Had my friend not took his life, and then, you know, it's actually some positivity's come out of it, which is good because it helps kind of dealing with the whole thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That guy, like, I met him, you know what I mean? He came to the show like 6 months later.
Oh, wow.
And it was, you know, it was very hard because I didn't have any answers for him, you know, and I didn't really have, I was kind of terrified that he was going to expect me to have some sort of like really great perspective. I don't, like, I'm just a kid. Life's hard for you too sometimes,
right?
I'm a stupid kid. Sure. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not clever enough to actually have any answers to these big questions, but I do ask them.
Yeah.
And he sat and we had a chat and he gave me a massive hug. I gave him a huge hug. We sat and chatted and did an interview on the radio.
Wow.
And it was like, it was a big special moment, man.
Yeah. Yes.
It was the first, like, I know I'm never ever going to overestimate my job as a musician. I know that as a singer-songwriter, we are primarily entertainers. Yes. That is all we do.
Yeah.
But there is an odd time where your music does something where it raises a conversation and it reaches people on a level that actually makes you feel like your job's got a bit more clout than it has,
totally.
You know what I mean? Which is wonderful. It's wonderful.
Also, Dead Boys, das eben gehörte Stück von Sam Fender, das er einem Freund gewidmet hat, der sich einst das Leben nahm, einem nahen Freund. Dieses Stück hat positive Effekte gehabt. Erstmal wurde eine Diskussion angeregt über Mental Health, also über psychische Probleme, vor allen Dingen bei Männern. Und es hat sogar ein junger Mann sein Auto umgedreht auf dem Weg quasi zum Suizid, als er Sam Fender im Radio über dieses Thema sprechen hörte. Jetzt sage ich den klassischen Satz in deutschen Medien, den man dazu sagt, wenn man über Suizid spricht. Wenn ihr Probleme habt, mentale Probleme, wenn ihr psychische Probleme habt, wendet euch an Freunde, Bekannte oder Professionelle und überdenkt quasi den letzten Schritt nochmal. Sam Fender ist hier jetzt nochmal zu hören mit Pound Shop Kardashians, ein Stück Musik, das uns wieder entführt in lustigere Gefilde. Pound Shop Kardashians, Sam Fender auf Flux FM. Sam Fender auf Flux FM mit Pound Shop Kardashians. Während die Musik lief, haben wir uns ein bisschen unterhalten über die Grace-Platte von Jeff Buckley, die für uns beide inspirierend war. Great, great record. And it inspired you to sing a bit higher than you would normally do.
Well, I've got a high voice anyway. Yeah. I know for a boy who's 6'1", I've got a bit of a squeaky voice.
Yeah, and in comparison to your speaking voice, which is pretty deep.
Well, I don't think about that. What you're talking about. Hey, man. I was always a high singer when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And I think like that was for me, I kind of was like, when I heard Jeff Buckley, I was like, oh, cool. I can be like that.
Yeah.
You don't have to be like overtly masculine when you're playing guitar. It can be beautiful and rock and roll at the same time.
Yeah. That's totally true. I mean, he was really like confusing me back then because I was like, that's what you can do with a guitar and a voice only? That's crazy.
Yeah, it's just insane, crazy, isn't it?
Now we've listened to Pound Shop Kardashians and Dead Boys. These are two songs that are kind of like revolving around your hometown and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's going to be more about your hometown on the LP. And and you've once described, and I really love that, your hometown as a drinking town with a fishing problem. Now that's great.
Yeah.
So how's that for an artist as a source of inspiration to be from a
drinking town with a fishing problem? Yeah, it's my hometown's.
Because I know that your father and your brother, they were like jamming as musicians in pubs as well.
They were musicians, but they were also working men as well. You know, like I'm from a very blue collar town and I'm from a blue collar family. Like all of my family are like workmen, you know.
Mm.
None of them went to university or anything like that. And neither did I, you know what I mean? Like, my dad's a jack of all trades. He worked on rail yards. He's done all that. But by night, he was a musician.
Nice.
He'd be playing in the working men's clubs.
Yes.
You know, in the 70s. You know, so it is a very blue collar town and it does have a massive impact on my music. And it's small as well, man. Like the whole borough of North Tyneside, which is like Whitley Bay, Wallsend, North Shields, like all of these, like, you know, Percy Main, Tynemouth, all of these places.
Never heard of any of these
places. Well, all, exactly.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, all of them towns. There's only 30,000 people in the whole borough.
Yeah.
And I'm from North Shields, so there's only a couple of thousand people in my hometown. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a small place. Everybody knows who I am anyway. They knew who I was before, you know, we started.
Yeah, but that must be refreshing, kind of. It keeps you down to earth.
Yeah, it's good because I go to the pub and everyone's just like, oh, there's Sam. He's just a fucking idiot. You know what I mean? So, like, it's like, who cares?
Yeah. Critics' Choice Awards. I don't give a fuck.
They totally take the piss. Me. They're just like, I walk in and they're just like, oh, here he is.
Oh, the fine boy.
Here he is, the fucking Critics' Choice winner.
I love it though.
We said we're going to make my Brit Award. I was going to turn it into a beer pump.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to like drill into it so it become like a real ale hand pump. and just like fucking leave it there. Call the pint Critics' Choice. I'll have a pint of Critics' Choice, please.
That's such a great idea, though.
Yeah, it'll be good
such
fun.
Such a great idea. So you're finished with the album. There's nothing to be done with that one
mastering anymore. Mastering, yeah.
Okay, cool. But that's something that's kind of like... You can sit with the master guy.
I'm happy with
and
the
tell
mix.
Him to make it louder and louder and louder. But it's,
yeah,
it's not a super creative process that you have to live through.
No,
anymore.
I just wanted to. The mixing is done, and that was the important bit for me. Sounds fucking massive.
Cool.
I'm really excited, and it's a real big mix. Like it's a classic debut album in the sense that it's got a lot of different things going on. It's not just sort of. It's not as. I reckon my second album, when I get round to doing that, is going to be a bit more cohesive and a bit more like have a bit more continuity through it.
Yeah.
Whereas this one's kind of like a big mix of stuff, which is I think is what Grace, you know, Jeff Buckley, like,
yeah, totally.
Grace's album is like, you know, you've got Corpus Christi, Carol, you know, you've got like mad like. Choral Christian sort of choiry sort of you know things like a carol and then you've got you know Eternal Life and big rock songs like Grace and stuff so like I'm kind of you know hopefully I'm not saying it's going to be like Grace because Jeff Buckley's much
that
better
that would be so cool
he
though.
Was much better than
that
me
would be so, but, my debut album is going to be a lot like Jeff Buckley's Grace
no it would
it's
going to
be a classic
soon. No it's not I'm saying that it'll be like a shit version of Grace it'll be like It'll just has the similar diversity between tracks. That's what I mean. That's all I was saying.
Yeah, cool.
I mean, fucking, some of it sounds like Bruce Springsteen. Some of it, you know what I mean? It's like, it's.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to it because you've just played a song that's going to be on the second album, maybe. It's going to be interesting. There's going to be interesting stuff happening.
Oh, there's fucking loads going on, man.
Yeah,
I've wrote the second album already.
Cool. So you did start with the lyrics this time because I've heard that you made
a
switch.
I've started writing lyrics first. I find it a lot more freeing and I don't have to sacrifice the story in order to for the melody or the guitar.
That's true.
Or stuff. I just have to shoehorn the guitar music into the lyrics. But it's more important you get your point across more and I feel like it's made me a better writer.
No, and I really think I want you to keep on doing that because I really think lyrics are more and more important when it comes to independent alternative kind of independent
guitar music. Fucking too
made
right.
by boys, you know?
Yeah, especially because
Especially
because there's been loads and loads of white boys with guitars over the last couple of years, and I think it's really really hard to do anything that's remotely fucking interesting because you know like let's face it there has been a lot of mundane shit
and I think if you know there's these rules that apply to the hip hop game and one of them might be each one teach one, you know, the each one teach one thing.
Yeah.
And I think as soon as you apply that to indie music, it gets interesting again.
As soon as you're like,
I have an opinion and I want to spread the word.
I'm hoping that, because there's a lot of great indie stuff coming out. And you were saying there is a lot of amazing female indie artists.
Yeah, yeah.
Well. Like, I love like Phoebe Bridges and have you heard Big Thief?
Yes, sure.
I love Big Thief.
Yeah,
man.
Me too.
And it's like, I'm kind of like, we need more girls involved.
That's happening though.
Especially
from Australia, all the
Courtney Barnett.
All the great, great artists.
Yeah, it's incredible, man.
Race.
It's incredible. Yeah. And it's an exciting time for guitar music.
Yeah.
Did you know that actually, I read that as well, that Fender guitars, the sales of guitars has been predominantly girls.
Cool.
Recently. So girls are buying guitars.
Lovely.
Which is brilliant. We need that. Because fucking boring white boys with guitars, it's overdone. You know what I mean? I'm a part of a dying breed.
Yeah, well, just go for a few more LPs and then you can sell your guitar to a young girl.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm not fucking selling my guitars, don't be stupid.
Heute Abend spielt Sam Fender im Columbia Theater und wer da Eintrittskarten gewinnen möchte, die letzten in der Tat, die es überhaupt gibt, der kann uns jetzt anrufen unter der 030 2000 9000. Berlin 2000 9000, das ist die Nummer zum Glück. Wir haben die allerletzten Tickets für Sam Fender heute Abend im Columbia Theater. Die Show ist restlos ausverkauft. Sam, thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having me, mate.
And I hope we'll meet again pretty soon in the end of the year. Maybe when you finish the album, you're going to come back for another part of the tour.
100%. We're going to do another tour when the album's out.
Yeah, cool. So I'll see you then. Sam,
of course you will.
War bei mir im Studio. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
030 2000 9000 ist die Nummer zum Glück. Und hier Hypersonic Missiles zum Abschluss. Bye, Sam.
Bye. Dutch kids hot balloons in the parking lot.